Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. We have an extraordinarily interesting individual today. We have Carl Wicklund. He is the director of the American Probation and Parole Association. Carl's been around for a long time. He has 35 years of experience in corrections in the human services field, as well as being the executive director of the American Probation and Parole Association. He served as deputy of a three-county adult and juvenile probation and parole department, as well as developed and managed a variety of community-based private sector programs for juveniles and adults. He has a whole slew of national awards, and one of the things that we wanted to do today was to bring Carl on to talk about a new marketing program. The association is trying to market Parole and Probation and Community Corrections Association. They have a brand new packet out that explains the marketing philosophy, a branding program, as Carl likes to refer to it. There's a couple telephone numbers or a couple points of contact where you can get additional information about that, either by calling Carl's wonderful public relations person, Diane Kincaid, at area code 859-244-8196, 859-244-8196, or at www.appa-net.org. And with that long introduction, Carl Wicklund, welcome to our microphones.
Thanks, Len. It's nice to be with you.
You know, one of the things, Carl, that has always amazed me, that the American Probation and Parole Association, I mean, you are truly the national advocates for those of us in parole and probation and in community corrections. You're the people who do the lobbying, who put together the materials, who call the conferences, who advocate for the rest of us. And I would imagine it's a very natural progression to really take a look at a branding program to improve the image of parole and probation, and to get whatever message that we have out to the public in a comprehensive and coherent way. So I'm assuming that was the heart and soul of the branding program.
Exactly. One of the things that our leadership began to talk about was what image, if any, was there of probation, parole, community corrections programs and services, and how did the public really view us? And when we started looking at things, for instance, you know, doing a search on the web, found, you know, any images of probation and parole was usually somebody sitting behind a desk with a stack of papers. Mm-hmm. Or when you look on TV, any time a probation or parole officer seems to be portrayed, they seem to be either buffoons or not being able to keep track of people, et cetera. So it was a very negative image that way. As well as when you hear legislators and policymakers talk about the justice system, they talk about the law enforcement, they talk about prosecutors, they talk about the courts, they even talk about public defense, but you rarely hear them talk about probation, parole, or any of the community corrections programs that are out there.
The overwhelming majority of the people who are involved in the criminal justice system are under our supervision, and I think we're talking about 80%?
70% of the adult correctional population is currently under the jurisdiction of probation and parole officers, and 6 in 10 adjudicated juvenile cases fall to community corrections for supervision.
So the vast majority of what we call crime, the vast majority of what we call criminals, come under our purview. We're the ones who are responsible in terms of both protecting the public and providing the programs to these individuals to help them cross that bridge from being tax burdens to taxpayers. We are the ones on the front line.
Exactly. And, you know, we're continually seeing the number of people that are placed on probation or parole increasing. I think there was like a 270% increase from 1980 to 2006. So, I mean, that's pretty significant. And with the current trend of, you know, a lot of people looking at the financial aspects of incarcerating so many people, they're looking at jailing the worst offenders and closely supervising and retraining the rest. The burden is going to be falling on our field, and the field is already pretty strained.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most important part of this whole discussion. The field is strained. It's immensely strained. We have just an amazing amount of people that we're responsible for. I'm told that in some cases throughout the country, the caseloads could range in the hundreds for the individual parole and probation agent. So obviously there needs to be some message, it seems to me, to get out to tell people that, A, we're an extraordinarily important part of the criminal justice system, and B, we're responsible for protecting their safety. And if we do that coherently enough, maybe we'll get both the respect and the money that we need to do good programs.
Well, I mean, it's clear, it became clear to us that we had to do a better job of communicating the crucial benefits that probation, parole, and community corrections bring to our communities and to society. So, you know, we invested time and resources to develop a clear, meaningful identity and a powerful communications platform. At least we think it's a powerful communications platform.
What do we want people to do, Carl? What is the whole idea? So this, you put together this packet. It's very comprehensive. It's very nice. It's done by one of the best known public relations firms in the country, and so you want individual directors and managers and staff of the individual parole and probation agencies in the states and territories to do what?
Well, what we would like them to do is ideally we would like people to first adopt the tagline of a force for positive change.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that they have to eliminate their own logo or mission or anything like that, but at least co-brand with that tagline, a force for positive change.
Force
so we have
positive
that.
Change. Okay.
And it's, you know, also for them to use this the turnkey products that come with this whole branding packet to better position themselves. And so we have this consistent message that's getting out there, you know, that we have a new identity that's thoughtfully and consistently being presented. And that way, with a common tagline and a consistent message, we become better known in our communities for the valuable successful services we provide every day.
Now, I come from the law enforcement field. That's where I started off when I was 18, when I was a cadet for the Maryland State Police, went on to be a trooper, spent about 6 years in law enforcement, ended up in mainstream corrections. Now, those are entities where nobody doubts the ability, if you will, generally speaking, on the part of the average citizen. They embrace the presence of law enforcement. They understand that law enforcement needs to be there. They understand that the mainstream correctional facilities needs to be there in terms of separating the truly dangerous from the rest of us. How do you think the public, and I think you touched upon this in your opening, how do you think the public views parole and probation agents who are ordinarily college-educated individuals and well beyond their bachelor's degrees, many hold advanced degrees. How do you think that the average citizen sees parole and probation and does that have an effect in terms of the money that comes our way?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that, you know, we have been living down a reputation that if you're put on probation, you're getting a slap on the wrist. And we need to live that down and help the community understand that it is anything but a slap on the wrist. As well as with parole, oftentimes the only time people hear about parole is when somebody does some heinous crime. Yet so many parolees successfully complete their time under supervision. So even in looking at the tagline, when the tagline was developed, we worked with Fleshman Hillard World Communications Group to do this, and they certainly did a lot of pro bono work for us and are continuing to do that, which has been very, very, very nice. And they came up with this tagline, and the reason they came up with the tagline of a force for positive change is because I don't think that the public fully appreciates the dual role that probation, parole, and community corrections plays. We have the role of being law enforcement, of ensuring people are complying with their conditions of supervision, of making sure that they're being law-abiding. But on the other side of that, we also have that role of changing behavior, of bringing about positive change in people and making them participatory members of our communities. And ultimately, both bring about long-term public safety. And so we need to do a better and more consistent job of getting our message out to the public so that they understand just how important and how critical probation, parole, and community corrections are to the safety and health of our communities. And at the same time, helping to restore juvenile adult offenders to productive lives and making sure victims receive their restitution.
I've seen firsthand parole and probation agents, both in the District of Columbia and in the state of Maryland, go out and do the things that they do. They're in high crime neighborhoods. They place themselves at risk. They're there to ensure that the individual is complying with the terms of his or her supervision, whether it be probation or whether it be parole. So they're interacting with individuals. They meet and exchange information and intelligence with law enforcement. Individuals are just as much on the front lines in terms of crime control than any police officer in the country. In fact, considering the fact that many of them are in high crime neighborhoods throughout the country, and considering that many of my law enforcement brethren in the past are not, that you could actually consider parole and probation agents to be closer to the real issue, closer to the real crime issue in high crime areas and in metropolitan areas throughout the country. So I think it's a shame that people truly do not understand that parole and probation agents are out there, oftentimes by themselves, oftentimes in the homes and the neighborhoods of individuals who have a history of violence. I admire parole and probation agents. I admire their courage. I admire their fortitude. They go out there, generally speaking, in most cases, some are armed, but in most cases, they're not armed. And so they have their wits and their knowledge of the offender and their knowledge of the community to pretty much defend them as they protect the rest of us. I think, is that all a fair statement, Carl, or am I making too much?
Well, I think it's more than fair. I mean, it is fair, and I think that you're hitting at the crux of the matter. I mean, you earlier had mentioned how high the caseloads are, and that isn't enough for the public to know that they have high caseloads. As you're probably well aware, it's not the caseload size, it's the workload that goes with those caseloads.
Right.
You know, what is it that probation and parole do, and how do we help the community understand that? And in order to be more effective, you know, we have to have the public understand, you know, what it is that probation, parole, and community corrections represents, what they do day to day, because currently community corrections receives less than 10% of all total correctional funding across the country.
Now, let me dwell upon that for a second. Parole and probation receives less than 10% of all the funding, yet they hold 60-65% of all the offenders.
Yeah, well, more than that, but, you know, about 70%
of all the offenders. Okay, so that seems right now. I mean, it's disproportional. People who are listening to this program who are not familiar with the criminal justice system are saying, how can they deal with 70% of the offenders and receive less than 10% of the funding? So right there is the crux of the problem in terms of the sheer amount of dollars available to parole and probation agencies.
Well, and I think that, you know, if people, you know, if we think about all of that and we realize that it is basically by wits and dedication that we don't have more problems. You know, it's the wits and dedication of those individual officers and their agencies, as well as some of the community corrections support services like halfway houses and day treatment centers, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Drug treatment and also drug testing centers.
Yeah. I mean, if those things being held together by, you know, paper clips and spit, basically, are so vital to the safety of our communities, yet we just have done, up to this point, I think, a terrible job of helping the community understand what an important role they play in their own hometown security. You know, we talk a lot about homeland security, but I think, you know, we've turned our back on hometown security just to watch our borders.
I chuckle sometimes because the last time I was in an official capacity in a high crime neighborhood dealing with offenders who pose some risk to the public, I had a radio, I had a gun, I had backup. Our people, parole and probation agents, in some of them are armed, but the vast majority are not. And I've seen them firsthand, like I said, in the District of Columbia, in the state of Maryland. They go out there into these tough neighborhoods dealing with tough characters, and they're by themselves. They are essentially them and a cell phone and their own wits and their own knowledge of the community and their own knowledge of the offender. But I defy anybody within the criminal justice system to know the crime issue in that particular community and to know that particular offender any better. Better than they know that situation and that offender better than anybody else. And so you read these pre-sentence reports, and oftentimes they are just some of the most masterful things that I've ever read in my life, describing not only the individual, not only his background, but his criminogenic settings, the settings of the community, what influenced him to be involved in crime and drugs and the other social ills. These people are just, in many cases, they just deserve a vote of thanks. And their skills are apparent, but they're not apparent to those beyond those who advocate for them. That's, I guess, my point of view.
Well, and it goes beyond just those individuals that are under their supervision. These probation and parole officers are also seen to the needs of the victims of crime and understand the impact of crime on these victims, as well as the effect on the families of some of these individuals under supervision. And working with them and finding out that some of these families are so short on their own resources and being brokers for some of those family resources.
Well, we're going to get on to the programmatic part of it next. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Carl Wicklund. He is the director of the American Probation and Parole Association. They have a new program out, what he calls a marketing or a branding program. And you can get information about this marketing or branding program by contacting Diane Kincaid at area code 859-244-8196, 859-244-8196, rather, and the website is www.appa-net. I'm going to repeat that, www.appa-net.org, and it's right on the front page, and you can see it for yourself. Carl, the whole idea is that, you know, we supervise offenders, but simultaneously, we try our very best to get these offenders into the drug treatment / mental health, housing, educational, vocational programs that they need when they're out in the community, correct?
That is correct, and I don't think we can underestimate just the strength of the relationship between that probation or parole officer, as well as those counselors and caseworkers within the community corrections programs, relationship that they have with these people under supervision, and how they, as individuals, have an impact on people changing their lives.
The research seems to be abundantly clear. There's a variety of some fairly substantial research that indicates that the programs are necessary. And I guess the point that I constantly bring up are mental health offenders. We just did a television show a couple days ago on mental health offenders, and I interviewed a lady who had been through a history of crime and her own victimization as she was raped as a child. And, you know, said she had been on the street for years, that she was thugging and part of the lifestyle, and caught up in drugs. A very unfortunate set of circumstances, but the God's honest truth was that she had a mental health issue. She was out there victimizing society time in, time out. When she received the drugs, when she was placed on the mental health team here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, she straightened her life out. She's now productive. She's now taking job training. She's now paying taxes. She's no longer committing crime. She's no longer doing drugs. But is there anybody out there who doubts that if she did not receive mental health training, that she would have been able to cross that bridge? So it seems to me that programs are vitally important, and research pretty clearly states that the programs are important.
Well, I mean, and the research is pretty clear that, you know, a large percentage of individuals that are caught up in our justice system have mental health or substance abuse problems. And, you know, I think that part of what occurs is that somehow or another, people expect that they're going to change, you know, 15 years or 30 years of learned behavior in less than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that there isn't going to be some fits and jerks through their process of change, you know, is just unrealistic. Yet, you know, it has shown that, you know, that if you can deal with people's mental health issues, if you can deal with their substance abuse issues, if they have a good job, if they have housing, the chances of them committing another crime are limited.
Right. And I think that's a point that doesn't get across to a lot of people, that these programs, the combination of parole and probation agents out there supervising individuals. Now, if the person, and this is probably the best way of looking at it. I was with our folks serving warrants with the Metropolitan Police Department in downtown, not in downtown D.C., in Northeast D.C., and we met a woman there who was very strongly involved in the community, and her take on it was this: take the bad ones, take the ones who are really victimizing our community, but help the good ones, help the ones who need to be helped. So it seems to me that what she had to say when we're all out there serving warrants, that seemed to encapsulate what parole and probation is. The people who are an obvious risk to our society, take them and put them back in prison, but those people who want the help, who need the help, help them and have the programs available to help them cross that bridge.
Well, I think that one way of looking at it is that we need to figure out who we're afraid of and who we're mad at. And the prisons are for the people that we're afraid of.
Yes.
And those that we're mad at, we need to try to help them change their behaviors. And, you know, I don't expect the public to think that people are going to just magically change, and that there needs to be some consequences if they're not making positive changes. But, you know, I don't think that it needs to be an either or. Either you're on the street or you're in prison. I think that there's a lot of things we can do in between that, and that it's important that the public recognize that probation and parole is not about collecting people. We're about correcting people. We are, you know, we're part of the corrections system, not the collection system.
Mm-hmm. But we don't hesitate to put them back in prison if necessary.
Well, no. And I think that the question there is, at what point do you make that determination? Do you do that because someone is struggling to meet the conditions of their supervision, or do you do it because they commit a new crime? Now, if they're committing new crimes, that's a very different thing than if they miss an appointment or if they have a positive drug test. Those are issues that we should be trying to correct.
Sure. And I think one of the things, the bottom line is, for most states throughout this country, the governors really want this to happen. Why? Because their prison construction and maintenance costs are going through the roof. That there's a wide variety of states that have basically said, look, we can't handle this endless influx of people going back into the prison system. We cannot do centers for the elderly. We cannot provide daycare centers. We cannot fund good schools if we constantly revoke everybody and put them back in prison.
Well, it's bankrupting the states, and, you know, what a timely issue given our current state of affairs with the markets and everything. When the corrections budget increases are, you know, significantly, sometimes double digits higher than higher education, you know, that's a frightening financial concept.
I spent 14 years with the state of Maryland at the secretary's level, and, you know, it was made pretty clear to me by folks in Annapolis that, you know, you've got to live within the confines of your budget, and as any other state agency has to do, and as any other federal agency has to do. And in some cases, to live within the confines of the budget, that may mean putting that person in drug treatment, getting that person mental health treatment, getting that person to programmatic basic the programs that he or she needs to become a functioning member of society, because quite frankly, the prison beds are limited. Let's save the prison beds for the volunt and the people who prey upon us, but for everybody else, let's see if we can do quote-unquote something else. I think most governors in this country would pretty much agree with that. Do you think that's plausible?
I think they do, you know, and I think, and one of the things that we are hoping with this approach to branding the field or giving a brand to the field with good information is that we can give some political will to those policymakers who oftentimes have a hard time arguing those kinds of things because they are looked at as being soft on crime, as opposed to making the tough decisions about crime. You know, we're not sitting here saying that, you know, we can fix everybody, but because monitoring of their behavior, keeping people accountable is a significant part of what we do. But with the resources available, you know, if we could get the resources necessary, if we could get our agencies to implement evidence-based practices with what they're doing and demanding that of the programs that they're sending people to, I think we could see a significant turnaround in our crime stats, as well as see a reduction in our prison populations and jail populations.
Which means a much less of a burden to the taxpayer, which means that more money is available to go into schools, to go into the senior citizen centers, and to go into economic development.
And let's not forget, less people victimized by crime.
Well, and you started off with that whole concept, and that is the concept. I mean, people expect us within government to protect them. That's their bottom line. So it is a matter of public protection. It is a matter of public safety. It is a matter of fewer victims of crime. I keep saying that in terms of the people who coming to us with mental health problems, and according to Department of Justice research, you have an excess of 50% of offenders. I think it's 55% who are now self-diagnosing themselves as having mental health problems. So does anybody really believe that untreated, that person is going to go on and live a crime-free tax-paying life? I think it's pretty clear to us that that person needs to be assisted in terms of his own mental health problems, or he may or probably is going to go out and victimize somebody. It could be bothering him on the street corner, or it could be a violent crime. But mental health seems to me to be something that it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, people are pretty much going to agree with that. Or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And I think, but it even goes beyond mental health. There's a number of people who cognitively are not functioning at a level that would, you know, where you or I would say, hey, now there's somebody I want to have as my neighbor, you know, right. But that doesn't mean that we can't help them restructure their cognitive thought processes and their behaviors so that they can become good neighbors.
Okay, I'm going to give out the contact points one more time. Then I'm going to ask, then, if this is so apparent, then why aren't we doing more to talk about it? And why aren't parole and probation agencies throughout the country being a bit more aggressive? But the contact points, if you're looking for information about the branding program, the marketing parole and probation and community corrections program put out by the American Probation and Parole Association, your contact points are Diane Kincaid at area code 859-244-8196, 859-244-8196, or the website of the American Probation and Parole Association at www.appa-net.org, www.appa-net.org. So, Carl, why is it that we do such a lousy job if the criminological community supports this concept, if those of us in community corrections and parole and probation support this concept, if the fiscal realities in every state in this country, if the fiscal realities support this concept, then why are we so quiet about it?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that part of it is people are a bit shell-shocked within our field, because it seems like the only time they get attention is when something goes wrong. And part of what we're trying to do is get people to go out and utilize the materials we've put together, utilize that tagline of a force for positive change, and start to step into their communities and start to market themselves. The other thing is that I don't know, probation and parole and community corrections is so much, it's an amorphous part of the system to so many people. And it's, you know, when you talk about prisons, people have a clear vision of what that is. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a police officer, people think of somebody in a uniform. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a judge, you think of somebody in a robe. Or a prosecutor, you think of law and order, you know.
What you want to do is to get people to understand that we're a force for positive change.
That is exactly right. And we want them to take this message and to scream it out loud and strong in a positive and consistent manner, so that we do, you know, when people hear the word probation, they hear the word parole, or they hear community corrections, they have a very clear image of what that is, no matter where they are in the community or in the country.
Well, Carl, we're going to wrap up. Carl Wicklund is the executive director of the American Probation and Parole Association. Carl, I just believe that from seeing it firsthand for the last 20 years that there are literally thousands upon thousands of people who you represent who are putting their welfare and their time and talent in terms of protecting society. And I think you have a great concept in terms of moving this idea along, getting people to understand that they are there for their public safety. Ladies and gentlemen, this is D.C. Public Safety. We're now way over a million requests to the site at media.csosa.gov, media.csosa.gov, or simply search DC Public Safety on your internet search engine. We look at every comment, respond to every comment, respond to every suggestion, and we appreciate your continuing flow of suggestions. I'm Len Sipes. Have yourself a very, very pleasant day.